Well, I turned off my video so that I could bring my tablet closer. This is the first time for me to actually do the talk over Zoom, so I apologize for the lack of video, but we're here, and that's what matters. So today I'm going to be talking about gardening. It's one of my favorite subjects, and this whole chapter is about gardening. And if you've taken a foundations class in a church, you know that they talk about the seeds that we plant in our subconscious mind and or into the law. And again, that's what Holmes is talking about in this chapter. In the first sentence, he says, our self-consciousness gives us power to choose what we have in our lives. And that really nails it. We can choose our destiny at this point. We can look at life as exciting and embrace the change. And what this chapter does is go into some of the mechanics of making this work. Now, Holmes, as most of you know, grew up in New England, like I did and Connie did. And he was actually part of my grandparents' generation, where everybody had a garden associated with their house. So he would have been brought up knowing how to garden and how to plant the vegetables for the family to eat. So before we plant the seeds, we have to get the soil ready. So the first step is to determine the type of conditions that you need to set. For instance, if you're in New England, you've got a lot of rock to get rid of. You may need to amend the clay or add compost, correct the pH, and then you have to actually plan. For example, a lot of plants only tolerate certain conditions. Beans are one of my favorites. They like sunny weather. You can't plant it before the last frost date because the seeds will give up and say, I'm out of here. And so they want full sun. They want the soil warm. And they want a certain amount of water. And so that begins the planning process. You have to know what your plants want in order to have success. My cat says hello, by the way. And so you may be planting carrots in the next row over, and so you've got to go through that same planning process. And Abraham would call this process pre-paving. So likewise, use of the law is similar to preparing the soil. It takes whatever thoughts you put into it, and it produces accordingly. So we may not understand the entire process of manifestation, just like we don't necessarily know how a given seed can turn a carrot or a bean plant into a real full-grown plant with vegetables with the proper conditions. But that doesn't stop us from planting seeds, which we do all the time. We've been doing it since birth. And Mike Dooley, one of my favorite authors, says, when you think a new thought, entertain a new dream, or mentally choose a new goal, your thoughts leave you and go out in every direction to the farthest corners of the planet. And they carry a life force of their own, like ripples created when a pebble is tossed into a pond. I love that image. In fact, what I love about this chapter in general is the imagery that, besides the garden, there's a lot of other images of the creation process that I really love, and it's so helpful to us to understand as we're trying to make changes in our lives or adapt to changes that are being made to us. But something that we have to contend with as a gardener is the weeds. And, you know, most of us will mulch the soil and that'll stop them for a while until the weeds figure out that they can grow in the mulch. And this is like dealing with any anxiety or doubt or lack of belief. And like a garden, the mind needs constant tending. We need to try to maintain calm and self-assurance, knowing that the outcome that we desire is coming to us. So Holmes would say, your spiritual garden, first planted in the soil of emotional serenity, must be kept nourished with love and watered with expectancy. Don't let any doubts, weeds of doubt or anxiety, hinder its progress. Give it daily attention, entirely free from worry or fear as to the outcome. And remember, you can trust the soil to do its part if you do your part. And that's something, I don't know about you, but I have to keep reminding myself to do that. So I have another great imagery to share with you. My cat again says hello. She likes that thought, that like that quote. There's a woman named Florence Scovel Shinn who wrote in the early 20th century, and she talks about a logging camp where the workers settle, you know, they cut down the trees, and then they send the logs downstream. But inevitably, a log had become crossed someplace, and while en route in the river, maybe it gets stuck on a rock or something and causes a jam. And the workers would have to locate that log, which they called the kingpin, straighten it, and restore the rush of timber down the river once more. So Ms. Shinn encouraged her readers to find the thought that's your greatest oppressor, find that kingpin, and begin the process of straightening it out. Our kingpin is our great lie or lies, energetic squatters that we have allowed long-term free rent in our belief system. So these lies appear to be universal, ranging from being unlovable, not good enough, or believing that the world is not a safe place and making happiness, it's just not attainable. So how do we straighten them and restore the flow? Well, the logging camp workers couldn't sit and wait for the log jam to fix itself. So they took action, and I don't know exactly what that action would be. They couldn't have gone out with a boat, or they'd clog up the rest of the logs, but they we ourselves can't wait for outer circumstances to change before we start feeling better. But we need to cultivate the feeling of what life would be like if our big lies are straightened out and our experiences were filled with a rush of circulating good. And to cultivate this feeling simply means that we practice this feeling. If you've read Goddard at all, you know that's like critical to the manifestation process. So when you go to plant your metal seeds, there's no special season, and you're always planting with your thoughts. You're not waiting for the soil to be warmed or for the frost date to have passed. So it makes it important to keep your mind in the right condition and weed-free at all times. The things like your worries or fears, angers, hates, resentments, produce some unhappy crops. One of the biggest and baddest weeds to remove is a sense of inferiority. And I was thinking, you know, there's a couple ways you could look at this. You know, you may have gone to school and there are people there with in your classes that have more talent in certain areas than you do. But, you know, remembering that we're all children of God and that God resides within us kind of negates that if you take a look at it. And then, from time to time, people that were different or handicapped in some way may have been killed, as in the Second World War. And yet, you know, what they were killing is just another child of God. And I thought, I have a good friend who has a daughter with Down syndrome, and we talk about her daughter a lot. And over the years that I've gotten to know her, I realized, you know what? That child is a child of God, and she's a blessing to her family. And so it kind of changed my mind about people that are a little different, but that her condition in no way lessens her ability to be a blessing to others. Now, the other, on the opposite end, a superiority complex is equally weedy. And I grew up in you know, a place where everybody on the street was white and either Catholic or Protestant. And, you know, that's a good way to develop the feeling that you're better than everybody else because you live on this street. But the truth of the matter is we're all God's children and nobody is superior to another person. And lastly, you need to forgive yourself. If you look back in your life, there's no need to beat yourself up. Like pouring poison on your soil, and on your soul. And ideally, you should be able to look at your entire life and all the things that have happened, and you say, I've been blessed. So Louise Hay says that some of our biggest weeds come from a